Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for joining us here on Illinois Family Spotlight. I'm Monty Larrick. I'm joined by David Smith, the Executive Director of the Illinois Family Institute, and our guests are John Biver, Special Projects Coordinator for Illinois Family Action, and Ralph Rivera, lobbyist for Illinois Citizens for Life and Illinois Family Action. Donald Trump has been elected. We no longer have to worry about religious liberty, abortion, or higher taxes. Our work is done.
Our work's just beginning.
No, amen to that.
Okay. What do you say to that? Are we getting our hopes up, social conservatives? Dave, what do you think?
No. In fact, I would urge, you know, we're just a week out here from the election, and things are happening fast and furious. The media is highlighting every single transitional move by the Trump, the incoming new administration. And I would encourage listeners, especially Christians, to start praying fervently, because the decisions he's making right now are going to be vital. You've heard the old adage, right? Personnel is policy. Well, we need it's good news that Chris Christie, for example, has been jettisoned from the transition team, and Mike Pence is in front now. That's good news. We need solid Christian conservatives who are going to be in this administration. More than that, too, we need to be praying for his wisdom, Trump's wisdom, in putting and delegating the authority in his cabinet, in the administration, because these people need this platform, and they can have a tremendous influence on the direction of this country and the federal government in the years to come.
What's your take, John?
I agree with everything Dave just said. I am convinced that Trump is going to have enough good people around him to make good decisions.
And that's what we need to keep praying for. And right. I agree. They're there. Right. Let's just hope they're in the close circle, the inner circle.
It's not going to be a culturally conservative administration when it comes to policy. But Donald Trump is cutting a path where we are going to be able to push back, because when you start to talk in terms of religious liberty, you set the context of what it is we're debating. It's not who they are. It's what they do. If it's something they do, we can discriminate.
And to that point, in Hillary's concession speech, she used the word religious worship instead of religious liberty or free exercise of religious liberty, which is telling. Donald Trump doesn't have that same perspective. But even in his interview on 60 Minutes after the election, he really pushed back when he was asked about the overturning of Roe v. Wade. He pushed back and he said, "The Supreme Court justices I'm going to pick are going to be pro-life." He didn't apologize. He didn't quibble. This is one of the things that I got. What do you think about that, Ralph?
No, I thought the third debate, he was as strong as any conservative pro-life candidate could be.
Absolutely.
He was asked about Roe v. Wade, and he says, "Well, if I appoint two or three Supreme Court justices, Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned."
And he didn't try to quibble. He didn't come back, and he didn't apologize. He just said, "No, I'm going to appoint pro-life judges, period."
Right.
Well, will he do that? Because I can recall everyone was excited when Ronald Reagan appointed Sandra Day O'Connor.
Mm. Well, I wasn't, but okay.
Okay. Ralph saw it coming.
Tell us. I mean, we can get right. These Supreme Court justices, we could also get bit.
You know, I we could have, if Hillary Clinton had won, we'd be just slaughtered. We would have 0% of anything. With Donald Trump and more conservatives on the cabinet or talking with him, where we would have a voice, I think we have better. So what is that better? Is it 25%, 30%? That means that there are some things we're not going to like with the Trump administration. But we had nothing that we would like with the Hillary Clinton. So I'm not trying to pretend and say, like you were joking, Monty, everything's good. No, everything's not good. But we have to go, phew, we could have really gotten hammered.
And to your point, Monty, about, you know, we don't have work to do anymore. We've accomplished our goals. You know, the early popular numbers from the election have Hillary up by 600,000-700,000 votes in the popular vote. Of course, there's still absentee ballots to be counted. There's still military overseas ballots to be counted. So we don't know if that gap is going to close. The fact is, we still have a divided country, and many people still thought that she was better than him, and her policies were better. So we've still got a ton of work to do to educate the public on these issues, and the church is just as much divided as the populace is. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, John.
What are they divided on?
Well, on the issues, whether it's immigration, whether it's gun control, whether it's abortion, whether it's gay marriage, the church is divided. You know, evangelicals, okay, you know, 80% supposedly came out and voted for Donald Trump. But, you know, we've got Catholic Church. It wasn't that high. We've got other mainline denominations, Protestant churches that are divided, that carry the name of Christ. So we've got a lot of work to do here.
I agree.
Well, beyond appointing pro-life Supreme Court justices, and that's, of course, a biggie, what does Donald Trump have to do to convince social conservatives that they made the right choice?
He's got to do some of the things he talked about. There is no excuse for not defunding Planned Parenthood now. The Senate is ours. At least the majority, the House is ours. Yep. And you have a president who said that Planned Parenthood should be defunded. Whether that's totally or not, we don't know. Because
sure.
He initially said, well, they do some good things. No, they don't. But we don't want them getting 20% of any of that money.
Is he on the record at all? I'm kind of just throwing this out there on the Mexican City policy. Remember when Barack Obama came in?
Yeah.
It was one of the first things he did was to sign that or overturn it. I can't remember which way it goes, where we fund overseas abortions.
That's correct, through the Mexico City policy. And it went back and forth for each president. So, for example,
right.
And
George W. Bush was in,
he said no. Then you had Clinton. He said yes. Then you had
George W. Bush.
Right. He said no. Then Barack Obama said yes. Well, we would expect of Trump. Within the day, I mean, literally, those changed within that first day.
That's one of the first things they did.
Within that first few days, they should counter the Mexico City policy.
I mean, it really reflects the worldview of the left, where they need to kill little God images all over the world.
Right.
They can't stand the fact that there are more little God images out there. Anyway.
No.
Sidebar.
Well, one thing I think that maybe overlooked with Obamacare, for instance, and President-elect Trump has said he's going to kind of dismantle Obamacare as we know it, leave in certain things. But the Obama administration identifies health care as abortion. Abortion is part of health care. And what do you think he'll do with that aspect of a new health care plan?
Well, if you recall the battle for Obamacare, Obama himself said, some of these congressmen said, oh, a deal has been done. I can vote for this because Obama said, we're not going to fund abortion. So administration putting in someone for HHS,
yes,
who's going to, again, interpret personnel is policy, as
absolutely.
Dave said. You change that without law, because it's in the law. It's just recognizing and enforcing what was stated as legislative intent.
That's good.
So that can easily be done with that.
Amen. Listen, I want to ask real quick, John. We were surprised, right, when we were watching the election results. Wisconsin came in for Donald Trump. Michigan came in for Donald Trump. Pennsylvania came in for Donald Trump. Why do you think these blue-collar areas, working-class people, decided to reject the Democratic nominee and embrace the Republican nominee?
For the record, I was not surprised. I got two states wrong when I predicted the map in September. I got New Hampshire and Virginia wrong.
You thought New Hampshire was going to go?
I thought it was going to go red, yes.
Okay.
The economy over the last 8 years, actually longer, it's having a real impact on people's minds as far as how they think about the presidency. And these people who are Reagan Democrats, they're coming back in our direction. And I'm telling you, over the next year or two, the economy is going to pick up so much that we are going to be able to get policy done on the conservative side because the public is going to give us the benefit of the doubt.
Wow. You know, I also have to point out, I know people who worked in the coal industry. Illinois was one of the leading states in coal producing, but the Obama administration shut that down because of their climate change agenda, right? Global warming agenda. Will that come back? Do you think that had an effect in Pennsylvania and Michigan, where coal mining or blue-collar jobs are dying out?
Federal energy policy is going to be going in the right direction in a serious way. If you want to learn more about it, I've got some great links on my website.
What's your website, John?
JohnBeiver.com.
With a what? A B?
B as in boy, right?
B as in boy. JohnBeiver.com.
All right, we'll continue our discussion right after this.
People are talking a lot about healthcare these days. There are so many changes. So many questions. As Christians, where can we turn for answers? Well, at Samaritan Ministries, we believe the answer is in Jesus Christ, working in the lives of His people, demonstrating Christian community by sharing each other's medical needs, scripturally, faithfully. Here's just part of Lana's story in her own words.
I love getting the monthly share that I give to each month that has a name of a real person and their real medical concerns and a prayer request, you know, for them. That I get to interact with people from all over the country, just like me, and get to pray for them and know that they're praying for me when I have a need. It's great. I love it.
Lana is just one of over 200,000 members who are sharing over $23 million in medical needs each month. If you'd like to experience what it's like to partner with other Christians for your healthcare needs, and you'd like to see what other members are saying, visit MySamaritanStory.org.
Hi, this is Kurt Jarrus, the host of Veracity Hill. Veracity Hill is a radio podcast dedicated to striving for truth on faith, politics, and society. I don't have all the answers, but join me as I explore important topics with guests from respective fields. To learn more, text the word VERACITY to 555-888. That's VERACITY to the number 555-888, or check out our website at veracityhill.com.
Once again, thank you for joining us here on the Illinois Family Spotlight. I'm Monty Larry, David Smith, the Executive Director of Illinois Family Action, John Beiver, Special Projects Coordinator for Illinois Family Action, and Ralph Rivera, longtime pro-life voice and a lobbyist for Illinois Citizens for Life and Illinois Family Action. We've been talking about the big election that sees Donald Trump headed to the White House, and in Illinois, Trump didn't fare so well, but maybe he did a little bit better than we anticipated.
Well, the Chicagoland area, of course, ran up the numbers for Hillary Clinton. However, outside of Cook County and the collar counties, actually, Donald Trump won 91 of the 102 counties in Illinois. That is pretty amazing. Compared that with what Mitt Romney did in 2012, Romney only got 79 of the counties. So definitely a bigger turnout, and I would also point out it affected some of the downstate races. Not all of them, but we're going to talk a little bit about that this segment, including the I-80 corridor, which is had Andy Skoog lose to Jerry Long. A Democrat lost to a Republican. And we also had different situations with even in Kankakee.
These are legislative races.
Right. I'm sorry. Thank you for clarifying. This is state house, Illinois state house races. But, you know, actually, before we get into that, I just wanted to throw this over to John real quick, too, because this is not unique to Illinois. In fact, Illinois is kind of slow on the uptake, isn't it, where it's flipping counties and state legislatures red.
It's a very difficult election to analyze thus far. I think the aggregate voter turnout was not as high as I was anticipating and some others as well. So the media impact on this race actually wound up depressing Hillary vote because they thought she had it. They didn't have to come out and vote. So it's tough to compare election to election. Nevertheless, we did do better, just as you stated, about winning counties.
But the trend has been over the years, counties and state legislatures are flipping to red, is what my point was. We're picking up more and more Republican lawmakers across the United States, and not just here in Illinois. Illinois has been kind of slow on the uptake. We're slowly but surely moving in that direction. And of course, I would argue, and I think Ralph would agree with me, we need to work on getting more conservative Republicans elected, and not the Mark Kirk type, the Bruce Runner type, who are not pro-life, who are not pro-marriage.
Well, that's correct. I think we depend heavily on Republican votes at the Capitol. We do have Democratic pro-life votes, both in the House and the Senate, more in the House. That makes up that coalition that we need to at least stop legislation that is bad. But we heavily rely on Republicans, and to in any way alter that, to change those. But currently in the Illinois House, all House Republicans say they're pro-life. So you want to keep that. Any
That's right.
change whatsoever affects that roll call count that we have to have to stop bad legislation.
Absolutely.
And to
eventually, they say they're pro-life, but do they vote pro-life?
Yes. There was no one this year on the various votes on abortion.
And we've lost a few Republicans who were pro-choice in the past. I'm thinking of the woman from Glen Ellyn, state representative.
You had Sandy Pios.
Sandy Pios,
or
that's
Hatcher,
what, right.
Or Tom Cross.
Tom Cross, that's right.
2 years ago when they were in, so the House Republicans were not fully pro-life.
Right.
Now you have that at this point. Now after this election, we don't know. Because there were some pro-life candidates who won. I'm sorry. There were some Republican candidates who won that didn't complete our surveys. That didn't. They didn't fill out the IFI survey. They didn't fill out Illinois Citizens for Life survey. So we don't know where they are, and we're hopeful.
And they've been told by their party leaders, avoid those surveys, right?
That's correct. I was told more than once that. They were told, don't complete those type of social issues surveys. So we're in the dark a little bit because we don't know exactly where they are or to the extent they say they're pro-life. You know, just saying you're pro-life doesn't make you pro-life. You could say, I'm pro-life, but you're for physician-assisted suicide,
right.
Or you're for embryonic stem cell research with
tax
dollars. Right. So that's why our surveys are important. It tells us, gives us information about that candidate.
And I'll tell you, if those candidates are in fact pro-life or pro-marriage, pro-family, they really should be working with us, filling out those surveys, because we're helping get their name, ID, and positions out to, well, their base.
That's
you
right.
know, it makes no sense. But, you know, I know too many politicians who have this philosophy that they can't hang you for something you never said.
You know, and that's the other side. There's a group that attacks would be our people. And I've talked with them. I say, you need to fill out our survey. They say, well, I don't want to be attacked. I said, well, are you currently? Yes, they're attacking me now. And they didn't even fill out the survey. I said, so what do you have to lose?
Exactly.
Let those people, the pro-life people, know where you stand so they can vote for you. Otherwise, in my voter guide, I've got a U, meaning
unknown.
For that candidate means unknown, didn't complete a survey. And them saying to me, oh, I'm pro-life, I still have that U because I know from experience that someone saying I'm pro-life, I that doesn't mean they are.
That's right.
Hey, John, I wonder if these candidates who steer clear of these voter surveys are going to have the courage to take a tough vote if they are elected.
That's right. All the issues are the same. If they're afraid of voting on pro-life legislation, wait till they got to vote against the government unions when it comes to this pension mess.
Right.
I mean, all these things are the same. The problem with our party is we don't know how to campaign favorably on the pro-life issue. There are arguments to be made. Dave, you've discussed this in previous podcasts, I think. our side doesn't know how to actually label the left as the extremist party on the life issue.
And you know what? And too many candidates are afraid of fighting back and pushing back.
On any issue.
And if anything that we learned from this last election with Donald Trump pushing back continually, tweeting out, pushing, you know, okay, maybe some of the things were a little bit more raw than I'd like.
Yes.
But, you know, fighting back works. You've
exactly.
got to counter the message. You can't be silent because it sticks to you, right?
Well, I think they need to get in front of the issue. If you're pro-life, tell people you're pro-life.
Unapologetically.
And tell them that the candidate that they're running against is the extremist on abortion.
Okay, so let me ask you this now. Michael Madigan has lost his supermajority in the House. For 2017 and 2018, that's one session. The next session, which I think it's the 100th session of the General Assembly, what can we expect? I mean, pensions, pro-life, pro-family? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think – for me, when I'm down there, that doesn't matter. You know, losing four seats, you're still in control. It doesn't matter for
Madigan's us. Madigan's still in control.
He's
right.
still in control. Right. We have had trouble getting our pro-life legislation. By the way, I mean, we have six, seven pieces of pro-life legislation introduced.
Right.
We had it this year.
And Michael Madigan never lets it come to even a hearing.
That's correct. So whether you've got 71 votes or you've got 67 votes,
yeah.
you still control this situation. And for us in pro-life, that's very difficult.
Right.
But as it deals with, let's say, bad legislation,
yes.
That doesn't matter.
Well, I'm thinking, Ralph, of the two bills this session that were passed, House Bill 217, which bans reparative therapy for minor children, right?
Right.
And then Senate Bill 1564, which coerces pro-life doctors, nurses, and clinical workers that they have to tell where an abortion clinic is or give referrals. Those bills were both passed with one vote or two votes, right? 61 votes in the House, both of those.
The two pro-abortion bills, there were two this
That's
year
right.
that were passed by just 61 votes. It needed 60. So two-vote difference. If we would have won two more pro-life seats in 2014,
right.
we wouldn't be looking
so
at
So House
this.
Bill 217 wasn't two votes?
No, it ended up having – there were a few Republicans who surprised us, just came out of the blue, and so
yeah.
it was like 67 votes.
Okay. So going back to those pro-life, though, those kind of bills, razor-thin margins, losing the supermajority, will this help us, do you think?
No, because it's all based on that individual. We have, you know, seven or eight pro-life Democrats in the House.
Okay.
We need every one of those. And so we depend on those Democratic votes. So for me, it's the issue. It's who is that legislator, Democrat
sure.
or Republican? Where will he stand? And that's what's important. It's not the – now, if the majority changes, if Madigan lost his majority and you have Jim Durkin, who's pro-life, as the speaker – then we can have an opportunity to get our bills to the floor. But it still comes down to votes. Once you're on the floor, we still have to have 60 votes minimum to pass something.
Really quickly, what are the odds of Speaker Madigan being reelected in January as House Speaker?
100%.
101%.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just end it with that. Let's talk about briefly... Ralph, how do people get in contact with you?
Well, they can go to our website at icl-life.com, or they can call our office. They can call my office at 773-583-2069 to maybe volunteer to see what they can do, how they can work in their community.
And you give pro-life updates all over the state of Illinois as well, right?
Right. We actually depend a lot on IFI. You do a great website, and you're following the pro-life issues, and you can go to IFI's website.
IllinoisFamily.org, or call us at 708-781-9328. If you want to get a hold of Ralph, we know how to get a hold of him.
Okay.
John, how do folks connect with you?
Go to my website, hit the contact button. It's J-O-H-N, B as in boy, I, V as in Victor, E-R.com, johnbiver.com.
All right. Thank you so much. Ralph Rivera, Illinois Citizens for Life, and John Biver, Special Projects Coordinator.
Thanks, guys.
For Illinois Family Action. Until next time.
you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.